Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Well, there's only two rules. One is imposed by the government, and one imposed by the vicious tyrants at the American Freedom Radio Central headquarters in Texas. We're not allowed to swear, and we have to have fun. I think you'll figure out who imposed which rule. No, we're not finished, Joe.
Oh, sorry.
We still have a whole hour. Now, think about this. Imagine for a moment, just envision, that there's a city in the South Pacific that is well-versed in how to run a frickin' city, how to make it cheap, how to support people in the right ways, how to facilitate flow, how to make the economy work, how to not violate people's rights, how to not overimpose on their business standing if they ain't hurting anybody, how to take a hands-off approach whilst carefully guiding the growth of the city. Imagine that. Wouldn't that feel like a lovely place to live? In a temperate climate? With the height of technology and Western culture? That sounds like frickin' paradise, don't you think? A really cool tourist destination. Incidentally, Auckland is one of the highest destination hotspots for New Zealand there is. There's a hell of a lot to see and do around this city.
Yeah, there certainly is.
And it's a primate city as well. You can tell primate cities among many countries. What they are is they're a city that has more than twice the population of the next biggest city. It'll be basically the central hub of virtually the entire country. That's what it's turned into, with the harbour and the commerce and the inevitable scumbaggery that comes with it. And so, is Auckland sucking the lifeblood out of the country? This is a big debate that people have been having. I wanted to know what your position is on it.
Well, you could say that about any city in the world. You could say that about Sydney. You could say that about Brisbane. Because last year in 2012, approximately 650,000 New Zealanders left New Zealand. So that's the population of Māori, the Māori population. And this is huge amounts of people. So you could say that people are all moving to Auckland and Auckland's sucking the lifeblood out of New Zealand. But you could say that about Sydney. You could say that about Perth.
Well, you know what that tells me? That there's a global network syndicate at hand here who are fracking everybody simultaneously and taking the cream off the top.
Yeah, definitely.
One global plan, a whole ideology of people that have huge business interests, fingers in every pie, and boom, they got the whole thing stitched up, bro. We need to expose some scumbaggery here. I mean, do you think that perhaps lying to people, taking their money without lawful authority, making up bogus legislation, destroying people's homes, getting people arrested for no good reason, maybe even slapping on brutal force and what have you, do you think that would warrant some jail time? I mean, could you imagine if anybody normal had done anything like this? You know, like by force with a shotgun or so on and so forth. You know, have a trial that lasts for 2 days and he goes to prison for the rest of his life. And then all of these rest of these people, they love it. They just keep going on with it. And there's people actually still supporting them. That's what I don't get. Everybody in this city has been completely destroyed from frickin' rates, which I think was a misspelling. There was initially meant to be a P in that word there, because they rape the living bejesus out of every single resident in this city. It goes up and up and up. When they put in the super city, Len Brown goes, oh, it's going to not go up even further than the rate of inflation. We're going to keep it to the rate of inflation, all right? You're like, oh, yeah, that's very nice. But there's a law inside the freaking council that they can make up what the rate of inflation is. Jesus, they've got it stitched. They've got it stitched up. There's a massive ball of corruption. I do think that this needs to be addressed. This should be a central campaign issue, the corporate corruption of Auckland, because all of its problems, from the motorways to the private contracting and everything like that, are caused by it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, Vinny. One of the policies that John Minto wants to introduce to the Auckland Super City is what you do is you take the living wage of $18.40, and then what you do is if someone's that person's manager, well, they get twice the living wage or three times the living wage. So what it is it's a progressive wage system. So say the mayor, instead of them getting an imaginary amount of $500,000 that they just pick out of thin air, what they'll do is they'll tether that to the lowest wage person in city council. So he's allowed, say, 10 times the minimum wage person of that organisation, of the city council. So let's say he can have 10 times...
Is that $180 an hour?
Yeah, it probably would be. I'd assume that's what a mayoralty candidate would be more suitable, as opposed to what they're on now, which is about 25 times the living wage.
Well, so, even charging $180 an hour, that's like half what a good lawyer would cost you. Even less than half of that.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's fair if we structure it. The CEO of the Auckland City Council is allowed five times the living wage. The management maybe three to four. And so everyone knows in this progressive pay system how much they're getting paid. And it's only fair as us as ratepayers.
Don't you think jealousy might break out if everybody knows what everybody else is being paid? Because you know how, like, if somebody asks you how much do you earn and that person's kind of like a bit like, I don't really want to tell you or something like that. If you knew what department we're in, you would know.
Oh, that information's public on the Auckland City website anyhow. Council website.
Really?
So,
yeah. I can go in and see how much Len Brown takes away in like private contract payoffs, do I? I'm joking. I'm joking. Come on, Len. You know I love you. You know I love you.
Well, I don't believe he publishes those backhanders, as most politicians would maybe avoid doing that.
But yeah, especially if the person giving you the donation is Kim.com and you're the former mayor of Auckland.
Actually, I'd like to talk to you about Kim, who is one of your fans, I've heard. I think Kim has got a lot to bring to this country and to Auckland City. As what we're looking at doing is this government's looking at mining everything and environmentally destroying the country. What we should look at is look at people like Kim.com to raise the economy and turn New Zealand into the land of the long white cloud. So let's go out, instead of building dairy farms, let's build IT farms and data farms, and where the whole world stores all their data, and we pimp ourselves out as the IT sweatshop of the South Pacific. And this is, you're going to earn a lot more money than if we go and cut up all our resources, knock down and go mining everything. It is the best way to build our economy. And I think that Kim should be at the forefront of that, and he would be a great leader for this country to look at that. Well, I mean, how do you feel about New Zealand becoming the land of the great white cloud?
The great white cloud. A technology-based individual island chain nation tends to work for people like Japan, Taiwan, Hong Kong. Malaysia's doing it rather nicely. Didn't work out too bad for the British either. Does anybody think that maybe when people are proposing policies to quote-unquote, and I hate these words, grow the economy, create jobs. All these weasel words that basically mean handing the country over to foreign scum who have no interest and have no loyalty to any flag. They are taking over the country. This is the unfortunate business, because whenever we talk about anything from John Key and all of these National Party representatives, have you noticed that there's not a soul among them, you know? They're actually like, they're horrific people, you know? Like, this is the kind of people you would avoid at a party, you know, bro? What is going on here? I was up late last night and I came up with a brilliant idea for a rap song. And it's listing all of the things, well, only just a tiny few of the things that John Key and the government have done. Would you like to hear it?
Oh, certainly, yeah.
Now, we've got the GCSB and the TICS. His name's John Key, for a liar he's the best. Cracking open our nice national parks for mining. Corporate cronies and his mates seem to take a shining. He's got shares in uranium and Jackson Mining. It's amazing how TV news can be so blinding. Want to restrict our snapper but not a commercial operation. That's privatising oceans, if I understand the equation. You got fracking consents to pollute the water table. Hydraulic chemicals and pressure make the land unstable. Deep sea oil bids going to deep sea oil bids going cheap for oil barons. Gulf of Mexico, BP, now the land is barren. And the Exxon Valdez, John Key, please. Wipe that bankster smile off your face before it's too late. We're in more debt. that's like the first of three verses, man.
Oh, Vinny, I think you missed your calling, mate. I think you could be a political gangster rapper. Seriously.
I already am, bro. I've got a couple of tracks on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and the Parky Hutchies page. And I was thinking, bro, hey, on the 5th of October, it's the Day of Action Against National and at ALTS Square, 3 p.m. for those of you who are listening on to this. And I'm going to be MC. So I think I could just actually read this out to the crowd, mate. It'd be great, don't you think? It'd be the perfect audience.
Oh, are you the MC for it, are you?
Yeah.
Is Bomber tootied up? Bomber Bradbury?
Oh, I don't know. He hasn't indicated.
And so this is a national, an anti-national party.
No. This is the Day of Action against the national government.
Oh, okay. Well, look, I'll mobilise a couple of the people at Mana and we'll work out something. You want to get a hold of the Greens and Labour and get everyone involved, make this a cross-party sort of big thing.
Actually, I was thinking of going a different way because this isn't necessarily about politics. This is about the national government and specificity. What I want to do is have activists who are very deeply versed and some of the crimes and scumbaggery in graphic detail of the national government, things that John Key has been involved in, the laws that have been broken, procedural violations, and things of that nature that actually give us a very close-knit view of how this country is actually truly run by John Key and the national government. Because once people know how they actually operate from the horse's mouth, the people who have seen it, the people who have experienced it firsthand, I think that people will never, ever really consider voting John Key ever again. And all the parties, I'd love them to be there and take part, and there'll be an open mic and so on and so forth. And that's what I really want to do. I want to give this this sort of platform to the activists who've really been fighting hard to expose their scumbaggery and don't actually have a dog in the fight other than the country as a whole. As Thomas Paine once said, a patriot's duty is to protect his country from his government.
Mm-mm. Well, unfortunately, Vinny, I honestly believe as next year this is going to go into a fourth national government. And it's the farmers and the rural areas that vote in national. And Yeah, it's really, I think people can't see past the smile and that what the Prime Minister is about. I think they just fall for the smile. And he's the most popular national Prime Minister ever in the history of national. He's got the charisma. And if we can get past that, New Zealanders collectively, then we might be able to take this country back.
Yeah. We're in more debt now than we ever have been. We were doing quite well till John Key came on the scene. He used to sell derivatives, debt packets in a pinch, AAA rated, conning people as a cinch. He was the Federal Reserve representative for Merrill Lynch. He's a banker. A banker! You know what that rhymes with? That's right. Tanker. An oil tanker on the coastlines of Christchurch. Rebuilding contracts left the people in the lurch. Talking earthquake recovery and economic revival. Some people down there are struggling for survival, shivering in cold, trapped in the red zone, where refused insurance means you lose your home. But people love him, want to shake his hand. He's Teflon John, built the country on sand. They gave us a super city, corrupt corporate coup. Criminal business want my city unglued. You demonized, stole from, and defamed elderly Alan Hubbard, who died just before revealing the skeletons in your cupboard.
Wow, Vinny, you're the man.
I don't know about you, bro, but I just there's something that it feels really great to diss John Key. I don't know. I guess some kind of personal satisfaction about, you know, just doing that whoosh.
Well, what we need to really be looking at David Cunliffe and getting them to form a coalition. Because what the problem with Labor I see at the moment is they're still living in first-past-the-post mentality, when they should be looking at coalition mentality of getting the whole coalition of Labor, Greens and Mana to work collectively to defeat this national government. If he cannot unite these three factions within the first 100 days of his leadership, it's a fourth term Labor government. I'm sorry, that's the reality.
I do think so. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Joe Trinder is my guest. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. My very special guest is Joe Trinder. Now, we have a Facebook kind of link McThingy to give out, just in case you want to get involved in the battle down there in Mangere, you know. Facebook.com/mana.mangerebranch. That's mana.mangerebranch after Facebook.com, just in case you wanted to know that. Okay, Joe, we could delve into the super city itself. And I don't know about anybody else, but as far as I saw, what they did was they took something like $28 billion worth of public assets and then put them into private hands so that these CCO, corporate-controlled organizations, could seize control of the city. That's all I saw.
Yeah, carry on.
No, you carry on.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Vinny. I think that the super city is an absolute failure and that a lot of the ratepayers out there should be really glad that we lost the America's Cup, because the amount of development that would have happened that would have been at the expense of a lot of the ratepayers would have been extraordinary. They would have ramped up our rates for things that wouldn't have been spent down the waterfront. I guarantee you that. And I'll give you examples of why the super city is a failure. Well, first off, when they went to join Monaco and also Auckland City together, Auckland City had sold all its shares at Auckland Airport, so it didn't own any of it. But what had happened is Monaco City had kept its shares, and it was running at a profit. It was making huge money. So what Auckland City wanted to do was combine with Monaco to also get all that income that was coming out of those airport shares. And so just creating the super city, Auckland City managed to gain itself a lot of wealth. And also Monaco was actually financially far better than any of the other city councils that were out there. So what we're seeing now in the super city is the brown communities out in South Auckland, they're having to now carry the can for the whole super city. So, for example, us here in Māori, we're having Amity Option 4 with the motorway running through us. There was the prison out in Marurewa that the local board tried to fight against, and all good credit to the local board for trying to fight it and making submissions. But at the end of the day, they couldn't do it. They had no control over it. So a super city is absolutely disempowering communities that have predominantly Polynesian communities and also Māori communities as well that are in South Auckland. And I think that we need to really review the super city, either get or change of mayor. Yeah. Do you think that there is an issue here?
The question for me is, who has the control? Is the control concentrated at the top, or is it shared down the bottom? And when I see the structure of the super city, there is no sharing down the bottom. It is all concentrated at the top, which is the direct opposite of what I want a city governance to be. The smaller the smaller and more localized those particular branches of government are, the more likely they are to be familiar and receptive to the concerns of their local boroughs and so on and so forth. You know, everybody wants to put everything into one, you know, have one solution for everything, and I don't think so. I think the one solution to everything is kind of just eternal vigilance and actual connection with the community. Your local representatives have to be the kind of people on your street, you know, who come over and have a chat to you, or a cup of tea or something like that. You can't have a cup of tea with everybody if you're mayor of 1.5 million people, can you, bro?
No, not at all.
Yeah. The smaller, the better. That's how things really should be governed, and everybody starts looking after their own backyard, and nobody gets to take over the whole fracking show with their corrupt scumbaggery.
Oh, that's precisely right. And what we've got now, the situation is that Jerry Brownlee can pour so much influence over the whole super city because he only has to manipulate one city council. He doesn't have to go after three or four city councils to get what he wants in motorways done and transport. So it's not working out. The super city is a complete failure for communities in South Auckland.
Yeah, Jerry Brownlee pours on the influence like he pours on the gravy.
Well, one example of it, he runs CERA down in Christchurch, you know, for the recovery of the earthquakes.
I've heard so many bad things about this.
Yeah, so we've got predominantly Pākehā communities in Christchurch that are struggling with CERA, let alone brown communities in South Auckland that are led by his decision. So, you know, really, who's running the super city? Is it central government or is it local government?
Or is it the corporations that own both of them?
Yeah, well, how much are they pouring into the National Party's campaign funds?
I had asked one time at the National Party website to send me a list of their contributions over $10,000 that have to be declared. I didn't get a reply. I was quite miffed about that.
Golly gosh, I wonder why not.
Have you ever heard of an old phrase, pay the piper, call the tune?
No, I've never heard.
Yeah. Pay the piper, call the tune means if you're the one fronting the money, you get to tell them what song to sing.
that makes sense.
And that's what these politicians and all these candidates and things like that that are backed by the big corporate scumbaggery agents of these transnational mafioso bankster scumbaggery, I think. They're just being paid and they're singing us a little song, sing us to sleep while they stab us in the back in the dead of the night.
One of the things I would like to talk to you about, Vinny, is the recent leadership that change that they had in Labor. Oh, how do you feel about that?
I just want to make a comparison. So we've got John Key, who's, you know, evil bankster scumbag. And then we have David Cunliffe, educated at Harvard, and he lives in Herne Bay, which is one of the swankiest suburbs. Look at John Key. He lives in Parnell, which is one of the swankiest suburbs in Auckland. He's also an MP for Helensville, which is out in West Auckland. And what's his name? David Cunliffe is also an MP for West Auckland and doesn't actually live there. Have you noticed a connection here? That there's actually really not a whole heap of difference between them? And incidentally, David Cunliffe pushes carbon tax legislation, which kind of destroys a lot of the old local industry and so on and so forth, and doesn't actually reduce the carbon outtake, really, and just makes a whole bunch of money for financial trading scum. Well, guess who David Cunliffe is married to? The head of the New Zealand Carbon Exchange.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's because she doesn't use the last name Cunliffe. She uses her maiden name.
What is the New Zealand Carbon Exchange?
It's the place where all your carbon tax money goes. All the 5 cents on the dollar for the petrol and everything like that that we've been paying. Yeah, goes into this carbon tax fund. And it just goes out into all these different UN organizations so they can build an apparatus for a global government, more or less.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the recent leadership election in Labor, they had three candidates. They had Shane Jones, they had Grant Robinson, and they also had David Cunliffe. I was quite interested in the other two candidates that were there. Grant Robinson, he is married to a fine gentleman called Alf Kawai, and I thought that some of the topics that he brought up were fantastic. And I think he also has a lot of charisma, Grant Robinson. How do you feel about Grant Robinson?
Don't know.
Yeah. And also there was Shane Jones. And the one we feared the most at Mana was Shane Jones, because if they managed to get a Māori leader in charge of the Labour Party, we would have been decimated overnight. I mean, just he would have defeated us in vast electorates across the Māori electorates. And so we really like Shane, but it would have done a lot of damage to us politically. And it would have helped Labour also get back those Māori seats that it lost in the foreshore debate. Seabed and foreshore controversy, yeah.
See, this is an interesting part about politics. The person who you actually really like is the person you don't want in because it means that you won't get in. Doesn't that strike you as a really terrible system in order to represent people?
Yeah, well, Labour had a faction within itself called the ABCs, or they said anyone but Cunliffe. And, you know, I kind of understood where that faction was coming from. I understood.
That faction was coming from? Were they coming from that for the same reason I was, or what? What were the reasons they didn't like?
Personality conflicts, from what I believe, is maybe Mr. Cunliffe, he doesn't have the rapport with all of the membership, all of his caucus. He didn't have that sort of rapport. Whereas Mr. Grant Robinson, he's a really friendly chap. He's easygoing. And so he kind of managed to get that rapport with the caucus. Yeah.
So basically, it's a popularity contest.
Well, yeah, I guess you've got the ABCs could be feathering their own nests in some sort of sense, but...
Are they members by chance of Parliamentarians for Global Action?
I'm not sure what that is. Can you explain what it is?
It's a organisation where you have to be an elected member of Parliament in an alleged democratic country in order to get in. And also, the second requirement in order to get into this club is you have to pay by credit card. They have conferences all around the world about sustainable development and all of these policies. Basically, it's a global sort of brainwashing syndicate that just gets all of the politicians that are currently ruling your countries today into the similar mode of thinking of privatization and more or less centralization of power.
It's... Ruth Richardson and also Roger Douglas part of that organisation?
I would probably say so. Many members from Labor and National, they've got both sides of the House that belong to this, and usually the more prominent members, usually the ones who push their agenda the hardest is the one who get them through in Parliament. I think Winston Peters said that or something.
So is it policies based on neoliberalism, selling state-owned assets?
Yeah.
That sort of...
More or less anything that... you know how the grand idea of... one of the grand ideas, allegedly, of hardcore communism is that there wouldn't be any borders, right? And everything would be returned to the people. Well, it's kind of like reverse that, where there aren't any borders, except there's no mobility between them because everybody's broke as frack and there's an elite that dominates everything.
Well, okay.
Global syndicate, yeah.
Is Mr. Cunliffe part of this organisation, do you think?
That's what I want to know. I would probably say so. I would assume yes until I have the evidence that the answer's no. That's one thing that a number of elections have taught me is that all of the people that are put in front of you often have a backstory. And unfortunately, our media is so shocking at reporting on the backstory of these people and what all their connections are, who the players involved behind their rise into this position of leader. These are the things that are very crucial into telling what the personality and possibility of the policies that these people would be perpetrating on us.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I know what you mean.
A slug leaves a trail, mate.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And so with Mr. Cunliffe, there's a lot of people out there in the community I've spoken to, and there's just something they just don't trust about him. They've just got their instincts are saying there's something wrong here about this guy. He could be the next Prime Minister of New Zealand, but there's something that we don't know. Do your instincts tell you something about this man that something's not right?
He's a member of the Labor Party.
Yeah.
I mean, Have a look at the long list of Labor parties. They've fracked this country to no end, just as much as National have over the last few decades, because they both implement similar freaking policy, and people think that the next time they vote for change, and you notice how every single government that wins votes on change, it doesn't freaking matter, ladies and gentlemen. They're just lying to you. Stop voting for those bigger parties, man. They're co-opted. We'll be right back after the break. Oh yeah, welcome back. We're jamming. Big monkey wrench into the machine. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Easter Show. It's my final segment here with Joe Trinder, and just a reminder to those listening to the broadcast, this is a listener-supported show. What I want is 500 people to donate $5 a month. That gives me a basic reasonable income so I can go out and actually cover all these events and stuff like that, have no problems paying for gas or buying an activist a camera when they really, really need it, when they're going perhaps even overseas to different conferences and so on and so forth, and they want to bring back footage, put it on the web, that kind of thing. They lack the editing skill, frack, I'll do it for them. They lack the YouTube channel that can upload this or the internet connection that has that kind of ability, I'll do it for them. This is how we make the media freaking work, by taking personal responsibility for the problem at hand. The problem with New Zealand media is that you don't get to hear the truth in long form. You don't get to hear all of the devilish details. You don't get to hear the in-depth discussion that actually uses facts, representations of reality, rather than a big, confused mess of half-truths and outright lies. I seek to change that media environment in New Zealand by making the activists themselves, the people who have known what they've been talking about for years, the reporters. You give them the coverage that they need to get the truth out, and I can guarantee you the system, all of its intricate detail, will be heard and will be changed. Believe it, as I do, and go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Clicks the subscribe button, $5 a month is all I'm asking. And there's also a KiwiBank account there as well if you want to set up an automatic payment. If you support this kind of media, if you support the truth getting out there, if you support liberty, freedom, transparency, and the exposure of scumbaggery, then definitely your best bet, in New Zealand at least, is me. I'm getting this done because it needs to be done for lack of a better option. Right, Joe, back on to you.
Okay, Vinny, I'd like to talk about the Labor Party. Well, my family have voted for the Labor Party since the 1930s on both my parents' side. The Labor Party, I feel that it's changed a lot since its inception. And in 1984, it got into Rogernomics and neoliberalism of selling state-owned assets. And it's changed since Mickey Savage's day. Well, when it first began, it was a socialist party and also semi-communist. And it was created out of the Black Ball Miners' strike back in the early 1900s. And the last working class prime minister that New Zealand had is Norman Kirk. And ever since then, they've just had professional lawyers or investment bankers and that ilk of sort of person who hasn't actually worked a day like us average people do. So I believe that Mickey Savage was a good man. I honestly believe that. When you take people like Helen Clark, who was the last Labor Prime Minister, she was the daughter of a National Party president. What she's done, and also Roger Douglas and neoliberalism, if they've moved the Labor Party to the centre from its original groundings of where it was. And I also think that David Cunliffe is prepared to go and take that battle into the centre as well. So what's happened is they've left the far left of politics alone, and they've stopped their core sort of union socialist policies that they originally formed on. And that's where mana comes in. That's what we are. We're a socialist party that is also has an investment in indigenous rights. So we're a movement of the people, and we're also socialists. And I guarantee you today that if Mickey Savage was alive today, he would join Mana and not Labor. Because those are we carry the types of policies that he originally went after back in the 1930s, 1940s. And Labor's gone so far centre that what's the difference between Labor and National anymore? Does anyone know? Does anyone in Labor even know that?
I was thinking that you really only need to ask two questions. What you want enforced out of a party. So I think that parties should be kept at their word. If they promise something, they kind of have to freaking deliver it, don't you think? The real problem is misrepresentation of policy, I see. Everything that has been done to this country since the 1980s, since the first kind of round of Roger Nomics, maybe even before then with Muldoon. Apparently New Zealand gave its issuance of currency over to a more privately run organisation, something that's got shares in it, like the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, for example. And I think the same thing happened in the United States when they instituted the Federal Reserve. Instead of the people issuing a public currency and regulating its value, you have bankers, private bankers, creating the money up out of thin air and then charging interest to you, but not printing the interest. So it's mathematically impossible to ever repay the debt. And then when they get you in debt, that's when they start taking your national assets. That's when they start privatizing your prisons. That's when they start, you know, X, Y, Z. I think the instrument here, the main cause of all this scumbaggery, is foreign banking debt, which is made up, and we don't frickin' need it. We should pull in Iceland.
Yeah, well, if you look at New Zealand's debt since this national government's taken over, we started off at approximately government debt. This is not including all other private debt or what companies get. This is purely government debt. We started off at around about $25 billion. So we had a way to pay it off. Now we've gone up to $50 billion since John Key, to $55 billion since John Key's taken power. So what he's done is he's doubled our government international debt.
In other words, by himself, John Key has gotten this country into more debt than all previous prime ministers combined.
That's it. And an example of this is if in Australia, Tony Abbott's taken over, the Australians have got $300 billion in debt, and they are concerned. They're really worried. The difference between Australia and New Zealand is we have about 4 million population, and they've got around about 26 to 30 million. They've got the population to pay it off, and we don't have the population to pay off $50 billion of government debt. Now, compare $50 billion to their $300 billion. It's in comparison, we're in a lot of debt.
Yeah. It's like six times the debt paid off by 26 times the population. It's just not comparable whatsoever, you know. Oh, wait. I've got the numbers wrong there. But the point still stands. And I do believe that the World Bank had some documents leaked. If you want to research anything about government policy, you need to read this document. It's very, very interesting. It was leaked out of the World Bank, and it says 111 rules for privatizing a country. Every single thing that this country has gone through since like 20 years before that document has been released, has been run like a frickin' playbook. And now we're up to almost the end of the playbook, where they're privatizing all the national strategic reserves, all of the resource grabbing, all of the control of the infrastructure, control over the electricity and the water supplies and so on and so forth. Oh, yeah. It's frickin' happening. The country's being bought out by banks who get to make money up. Isn't that a magic moment, magic trick? Dig this. They only have to have 10% in reserves. They can make up 90% of the money. And anytime anybody comes in for a personal loan, they don't actually have the money to loan them. They just take their signature and then make it up on a computer. They're causing inflation at a massive level. All this money is coming into circulation and there's nothing to soak it up. That's why the costs of everything are ballooning so dramatically as well. There's a real central core here. The reason why an economy runs, the reason why a country even survives, is because of the flow of money. And unfortunately, that flow has been channeled so that we get the debt and they get the wealth. This is the core country. This is the core problem in this country and pretty much all others. What is Mana going to do to address that?
Well, what I'd like to see is Roger Douglas initially was advised by Treasury on neoliberal policies. And what we need to do is we need to look at the people who Treasury are employing and ask them if ask every single employee, do you support neoliberalism? And if any of them say yes, you fire them on the spot. We've got to clean out Treasury and get rid of people that actually believe in neoliberalism. They're the most dangerous people that could have advised Roger Douglas on his Rogernomics policy. And what they believe in is they believe in short-term gains and not long-term investment. And that's what we need to do as an economy. We need to live here like we're looking after our children's investment and future generations. Not just this quick, let's sell everything and get a quick buck, because it's dangerous. Yeah.
It is indeed very dangerous. And it's back on the John Key rap. He signed us up to NATO, bro, that's in the North Atlantic, making speeches at the UN. Mr. Key, you're just pedantic. Syria was gassed by the West-funded rebels, financed and trained by American devils. Want another invasion of a sovereign state, Mr. Key, with a pipeline deal worth $700 billion with a B? Over here, you cut benefits and destroy the judiciary. That kind of behavior gets me feeling revolutionary. Locking up activists, surveil lawful activity, because you want power for yourself, have it reside in exclusivity. You're not a national treasure, you're a national disgrace. Can someone please wipe that smile off his face? You're a liar, I got proof, now you have no outs. You're the prime sinister, of that I have no doubts. Ah, thank you for listening to the show, ladies and gentlemen.
Shot, Viddy.
Yeah. Exposed scumbaggery all day, every day at www.thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Joe Trinder, thank you very much. We'll see you again.